What's going on, everybody? Welcome to your favorite podcast, Sleeping on Chairs, where we sleep on chairs.
Yeah.
We got a good one for you this time, where we just sleep on chairs.
And good night, everyone.
Yeah.
No, really. Can you do the intro, Robbie?
Yeah.
God damn it.
No, that is the intro. Actually, this is Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot, your favorite podcast about whiskey, web, and whatnot. With myself, Robbie the Wagner, my co-host, as always, Charles William Carpenter the 15th, and Run Spired.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going good.
How's data these days?
It's looking better all the time.
All right. Yeah, so you've been on before, but just in case someone has not listened to those and has no idea who you are, for whatever reason, can you give a brief intro into who you are and what you do?
Chris Thoburn, Run Spired on the interwebs. I've contributed to Ember and specifically Ember Data for quite a long time now. Been a fun journey, honestly, something I got into because I really hated the library and wanted to change it. And all the change I wanted to see happen is finally coming to fruition many years later. Been a long ride.
Yeah.
You sound really excited about those changes.
I am very excited about those changes.
I think we will drum up more of that excitement. You from the last time you were on, there have been some other changes as well. Your employment has changed. Talk about that if you want.
I hadn't moved yet. Oh man, maybe I was keeping it under wraps.
Yeah, it might have been.
So I'm at Audit Board. We do compliance software, you know, risk management, all that kind of thing. Been a lot of fun doing infrastructure. Great team, growing like crazy. If you've never heard of us, you probably will have in a year at that kind of speed.
Yeah, definitely. Owning the space, so that's awesome. Good for you. I think that was worth announcing. Alrighty, folks. Well, today the whiskey is the Hibiki by the Suntory Distillery in Japan. It is the Japanese Harmony. Blah, 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 blah. So this is a meticulous blend of the finest selection of whiskeys. And from what I've read, it is a combination of both malted and grain-based whiskeys. Doing a blend there. 43% alcohol, so 86 proof. It's a lower one than some that we have, but Japanese whiskeys tend to like really do it well and dial it in on flavor. So I'm into that. It's not age stated, but it has to be at least 2 years in the barrel. And that's all there is to know. Let's pop it and drop it.
Yeah, I've been, actually already drank some on accident because I forgot that we were doing a thing. I smelled it some just now and it smells to me like some lemongrass and strawberry fruit by the foot.
Ooh.
Is the notes I'm getting.
I'm getting a little of the lemongrass, but again, every time you say some kind of smell or flavor or thing, I keep feeling it. Yeah. It pushes.
How about roast beef? Do you smell that?
No, not at all. That's a good one. You know, okay, so this is a funny one, and maybe this is kind of like the fruit by the foot kind of thing. But so I get the lemongrass, and I'm getting a little grape Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which isn't grape at all. You know, we know that artificial grape flavors are not usually what they say, which is a funny thing. Like recently, my wife and I tried like a healthy orange soda with our kids because we were like, oh, they can try soda. Yes, exactly.
Love Olipop.
Right. And it does taste good. It has real like orange flavors in it. Kind of has an orange creamsicle kind of to it. But it was a miss for us because we were like, orange soda. And then you want to taste like Orange Crush.
Yeah,
that's what I want. Yeah. I want the flavor orange soda, not orange soda. That's
right,
what orange juice is for. So I don't know. You know, pluses and minuses around that. So when I mean grape Kool-Aid, I kind of mean like fake grape taste.
Yeah.
You know?
The better of the grape flavors.
Carpenter, I think you're smell-ceptioning me. I didn't smell anything, to be honest. I think it's like the didn't sleep much last night, getting ready for a talk today.
Yeah.
You know, for context, I'm sure this is not airing today, but gave a talk at EmberConf today. Wrote all my slides last night, so, you know, up late.
It was a marathon.
Yeah.
And whenever you've been doing a marathon for a few days and up late, I just feel like your senses get a little dulled.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So for me, I wasn't smelling much, and then you started talking grape, and now I'm picking up doctor's office grape.
Ooh, okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So again, streams of like artificial fruit flavors throughout all of our nose palates. So, you know, I think we're all in kind of aligned and like relating it to things that make sense to us.
I mean, it took me back to my childhood, maybe not a good way, but it took me back to my childhood.
Yeah. Hopefully you're not sick.
Delicious.
Yeah.
It could be just disintegrating these wonderful cups we have, and that's just chemicals we're smelling.
I was trying to decipher if that was the.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay. I actually get a little like, so amaretta has kind of a little bit of a cherry to it. I actually get some of that, a little bit of amaretto, maybe a slight caramel in the beginning. It's pretty smooth though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I haven't gotten is a hint of coffee. You know, we're drinking it out of these coffee roasters, Portland Coffee Roasters cups.
It's got to throw
Shout
you
out Portland Coffee Roasters.
Yes.
Yeah. But I don't taste the coffee.
No, not at all. It turns out I got clean ones.
Yeah. Damn it.
It didn't affect those at all. Yeah, so when you're doing a show on the road, you kind of got to take the supplies you could find. So you walk around town, you find a liquor store, and you get some, hopefully it's not warm by the time we get here, back, fancy Japanese whiskey, and then, yes, cups, just whatever paper cups you can find. So inherently, hopefully that doesn't affect things too much. But again, you have the mental model there. You're like thinking, am I going to have a coffee flavor or not? I don't know. I'm also not getting any coffee, though.
I am going to have to slow down, though, because it's so smooth. This might just be that my senses are dulled, as I mentioned, but it's so smooth, and it's like that. It's probably the grain, but it's just a little bit sweeter than the scotches I usually drink.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely not getting notes of like what would normally be a malt whiskey or a scotch-styled whiskey, which is usually what you get in a lot of these Japanese whiskeys. Which they can't officially say, but you know.
Well, but they're pretty good about making it extremely mild. Like some of them go too far and they're like kind of watery, but they still have tons of alcohol theoretically. So it's like, it's bad that it's so easy to drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see here.
Kind of tastes like a walk-in cigar humidor to me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So like the smells smell of that environment.
Okay. I'm going to throw you for a little bit of a loop here. Instead, I'm going to amend my previous flavor profile, not amaretto. Okay. Do you remember?
Not doctor's office grape.
No, not in a flavor, but I can kind of see where you pick that up in the smell in some ways, right? Like it's just a sweetness that speaks to you in one way or the other. Root beer dum dum. Yeah.
I didn't have to take another sip. It just showed up.
I mean,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's what I'm getting a bunch of. So right there, like heavy, something a little in the middle, and then it kind of fades quickly, and it has a very mild burn, very easy to drink. Yeah. I actually probably would like this with like a cube, an ice cube.
He Maybe said it.
Yeah, I know. for no other reason, just to kind of give it some like cool, refreshing, just the coldness would give that flavor some refreshment for me.
You could do whiskey stones.
Or a splash of soda, get real crazy.
Oh,
Scotch and soda. Yeah, that's a thing. Anyway, yeah, I'm sticking with that. That's root beer dum dum is definitely what I'm getting out of this. And
all right,
yeah. So since I went down the path and all of that, I'll refresh your memory on the rating system. So I just should amend it. I don't know why I say it in the midst of. So it is a 0 to 8 tentacles. 0 being this is horrible. I'm going to go throw up to get rid of this out of my body and I never want it again. 8 being amazing. I want to have this all the time. Nothing else will do for me. 4 is just great. Happily in the middle. You can segment that by other Japanese whiskeys, all whiskey in general, however you want. It's kind of like YOLO in that sense. Just because we have so much, we tend to start to categorize them now. So this would be against like other Japanese whiskeys for me. But, you know, not that important whether you do that or not. But the loose guidelines, which you may break at any point.
We're going to have to take this one with a grain of salt because I don't remember what I rated the last two when I was on this show.
Yeah.
So
neither do we.
It's not relative. Yeah. We're just going to say this is not a relative scale. Yeah. Right? I am not a professional judge of whiskey. This is not.
We are.
This is not associated with whiskey.
We get paid heavily for the
kids on my own. Yeah. I think I got to go with a 6. 6 out of 8. It's very solid. Not the tastiest, but drink it every day.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I mean, I can't really pick anything out that's like bad. I just, it's not my favorite for sure, but there's nothing that I can say is bad about it. So yeah, I think 6 is about in line with that.
Mm. Well, here we go. I'm going to be the throw things awry or not. I don't know.
Awry?
This is Japanese. Sorry. Well, it does say grain whiskeys are in there, so who knows? We can't really say. So, in the Japanese whiskey family of things that I've tried, well, I've tried a lot of stuff, and I do kind of have a taste expectation when I have a Japanese whiskey. So, I'm thinking that I'm going to get a profile that is like a Scotch, but feels heavily refined, right? And diverse, and you know, but with just light notes of like, oh, here's the peat or here's the smoke or whatever else. And especially a Hibiki, I mean, I've had some of their age stated ones that are non-blends, and they've been just great, just knocking it out of the park for me. So like in comparison to those, I just feel like this one is like, it's interesting, it's got a decent flavor. For what we paid for it, I think it's way overpriced, given that, but not bad. But doesn't really do much more than that kind of like middle sweet note for me. So I'm going to give it a 5. I'm kind of like 4.5. I'm going to say 4.5. It's like, okay, that's not bad. I would drink
better
it again.
Average.
I wouldn't seek it out necessarily.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Cool. So I think when we had you on before, we had not started the hot takes yet. So we're going to go through some hot takes that are kind of cooler takes now because they're not as hot on Twitter anymore.
Not as hot on Twitter anymore.
Lukewarm takes.
Is that That's because everyone left Twitter? Or?
No, it's just, well, I mean, you know, that keeps trying to happen and then people keep coming back. So who knows?
Yep. All right.
But anyways, first one.
I'm on Threads now, for the record.
Yeah, I am too.
I do come back to Twitter, but only for a couple of people in tech that haven't moved to Threads. And if you're out there and you're listening, I love you, but please move over.
Mm. Well, I haven't felt like there's been as many people like posting the same kind of things on Threads yet. Like, I would love to use Threads. I like the app, but
I have 3 communities that Twitter was like a thing for me for. Running, the first second Threads was available, whole community was on Threads.
Hmm.
And then 2 in tech. One is you're my Ember peeps or you're my performance optimization peeps.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is broader JS ecosystem. I kind of want to be aware of you, but like we don't interact a lot. I like to follow you. You have interesting insights sometimes.
Right.
That group is cross posting to both.
Okay.
But it's the you're my Ember peeps and or you're the performance focus peeps. Like they're all on Twitter still, and it's like oh come on.
Yeah, I'm rooting for it. I like it, but
we'll they see. Need search.
Yeah.
I can do with like the feed having everybody in it and kind of being like more exposure. I think that's a good idea overall. But the lack of search, like, hey, there's a race happening and I want to follow along the hashtag and that just not existing, that's been a little tough.
Yeah. Do they have, what was I going to say? My brain just stopped working. I don't know.
Welcome back to sleep.
Yeah, thanks for sleeping on chairs. Sleeping on chairs in a conference room.
Yeah, this has been sleeping on chairs. No, we can figure it out later. We'll do some of that and whatnot, maybe. But anyway, for TypeScript, inferred types or explicit types?
Explicit.
Okay. Because you write a lot of library code or always explicit?
Always explicit.
Okay.
My reasoning is this. If you need to do something in the function body that's a little bit not great, which happens, you at least want the return type to still be solid. It's more about the consumer of your thing than it is about what's happening inside.
Mm.
Now, we want what's happening inside to be as well typed as possible, but I think there are limitations of TypeScript itself that sometimes are hard to get around. So use the explicit types because it makes sure that at least the public signature that is consumed by everything else is solid.
Okay.
The other is just performance. Explicit types very easy because there's no inference. You don't ever enter the inference code paths.
Mm-hmm.
It knows exactly what you're returning because you said what you're returning. It's just trust me. It's trust me developing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think that's actually a good thing. Like we should care about speed and tools and correctness where we can get it for cheap is great. But ultimately we care about that balance of good development speed and good development performance. And I think you see that trade-off being handled by Svelte very differently, right? They have chosen to go all the way to JS doc with it, which is, for its worth, kind of sort of the same trade-off of we're going to type the outer signature and we're not going to care about the function body. But they still care about the consumer having a good experience, and that's what matters. Ultimately, consumer having a great experience.
I like that. I mean, I think that's the first take that has been so explicit on one direction thus far.
Explicit on explicit?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, most of the time the answer is depends. And then there's a lot of discussion about both of those paths. And I can't really argue that, but because I also think a lot of times it depends. But I respect anyone that actually like leans in and has a good reasoning for taking that and then just making that effective throughout all of their work. And I think that what you explained really says that. You weren't just like explicit because I prefer that and I want it to be readable or something else. I think you had a little more behind that and I can appreciate that quite a bit.
Yeah, so I did remember what I was trying to say. Do they have a web app for Threads yet?
They don't.
Oh, because you can't, it's really hard to like post media.
But somebody already reverse engineered the API and created like a thing you can download. I haven't done it. I just saw that you could do this already.
Okay.
And I think that's cool that even when you're building a native app, really you're building over web standards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because of it, it's all open whether you want it to be or not. And
right.
Somebody has already done that and that's great.
Like, yeah. Yeah. That was my biggest problem is like, I want to post this video snippet, but I have to like airdrop it to my phone and then post it, which is like ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has been nice to be back in a native client. I will say that. I hadn't been willing to have the Twitter native client on my phone in a long time. Mm. So I've been using the Twitter web app and for a while it was a really good experience. The mobile web experience was great, but it has progressively gotten buggier. And I'm at the point now, oftentimes I'm hitting the rate limit simply because I've refreshed 5 times trying to get the page to render correctly.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
loading errors all the time. You never know. It just like stops working all the time. You're like this morning, I think it stopped working. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I get a forced break. Like Elon said,
forced break.
Touch grass. Touch grass. All righty. I'm going to take the third question because the second one's more for you anyway. Get Rebase or get Merge?
Rebase.
That's what I'm talking about.
I don't think I've used Merge outside of helping someone whose workflow was Merge in maybe a decade.
Right.
That's the team I'm on.
Sub question to that. Who would win in arm wrestling, you or Ed Faulkner?
Oh, easily Ed.
Really?
I am so much into running, and I know Ed's a runner too.
Right.
But I am... But he has kids.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
And I am so much into running that I've neglected my upper body to the point of being a meme. Whereas he has kids that he's got to carry and push and bike with and do things with. So he probably has a little muscle there. He's going to beat me.
Yeah. All right. Very fair enough.
Yeah. He said merge earlier. So yeah, that's why.
I was going to explain it. Thank you, Robbie, though. Yeah.
Well,
because he was very like, and you were very nah. And not that there's an argument in that because...
You know, I think what Merge is great for is the friendliness that it brings to folks who don't know a lot of Git.
Mm-hmm. It is and the easy path.
It's the easy path. And I don't know that that's bad. I think some people think easy path is bad. Some people want you to go be the hardcore programmer, Vim all the way.
Oh, right.
I don't have that perspective on development. If you're productive, you're productive. If we can... lower the barrier to be you being a productive developer. We should lower the barrier to you being a productive developer. And Merge lowers that barrier. The number of folks that I see 5 years, 8 years into their career, and they have zero idea how Git works, at that point, probably to their detriment.
Yeah.
But the fact that they got to that point without needing to know is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically, Ed had said that you obscure the lies with Rebase, right? You know, like you change history and obscure the lies that have happened along the way. So he's like, bring them along. I don't know. It's ugly, but it's an interesting perspective. I certainly appreciate, like, that's true. It does. It does obscure the lies. And I want to cover up all of my lies. So
I disagree
better.
That it obscures the lies.
Yeah.
Well, it depends.
It depends. It really does. In the end, it depends.
It depends if your branches are long-lived or short-lived.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If your branches are long-lived and you've merged back repeatedly, you have no clue what your history
That's
is.
That's true. So
you can't step back through that if you wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's reasonable. So that's a whole other dimension to that, I think, too. Yeah. Long-running branches, I don't think there's a debate there. It's a bad idea. You really
can't. No, they're a bad idea. But if you're going to have something that takes a little bit more trouble to land, it's tricky.
I mean, it is going to happen.
Ed's going to hate me for this, but I'll tell you a common workflow that I use.
Yeah,
I do git reset to the head commit.
Yeah,
where I had forked off of, I stash it, I reset my head, and I unstash. Completely wipes the history. And totally. I'm okay with that because I don't use history in a way that I think it should be preserved. Mm. The commit that should be preserved is the one that I merge in.
Yeah.
If your workflow is like building a PR that is a thing, that like a logical entity that you want to get in, then that makes a lot of sense. Some people are like, well, the way I work is I, you know, want to say I did this part of the feature and this part of the feature, and I want to, you know, keep both of those.
If I did it that way, then I landed it that way.
Right. So you could do two PRs then, yes, or whatever.
It would be multiple PRs. Well,
yeah. See, what I think about that too is in the terms of how I want to release things and logically regress from those releases possibly, right? Like your release flow is also attached kind of to how things got in.
No, it's not though. It shouldn't be. I mean, feature flag driven development, baby.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes, true. Absolutely. Ideologically, it doesn't happen all the time though.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. True. It takes having a good release process, flagged release process in place to really empower the idea that you can partially land work because you have completed a discrete unit of it. Overall is not there.
Right.
In my perspective, if you've got something that tests are passing, it satisfies the requirements for the section you had, even if you're not going to be using it because the broader thing isn't built, it's worthwhile to merge that in and keep working.
I absolutely agree. Because that's iterative, and that's how you have short-running branches. It can iterate through things. You can decide at what levels you want to test that, so you can push that up to particular environments and stuff. I think my statement before is basically an artifact of being in consulting for a bit now, right? So, like, I've had to just adapt. I think I have my own opinions and best practices, and I try to, you know, impart as much as I can, but I also want to be a friendly visitor. And, you know, you just can't come in guns a-blazing in that kind of thing. I think ABC, whatever else, is the best way to go about it. You sort of got to piecemeal that.
Here's something I do all the time. I have been guilty occasionally of long branches. We all have been. I mean, who hasn't been?
Yeah.
I've been guilty of patch bombs. But what I do when I sense myself getting there is I ask myself, what set of these changes is something that I could peel off, do separately? So I peel it off, do it separately.
Right.
Use my whole get reset trick.
I love that trick though, right? Too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Whole get reset trick. And now that's not part of my change set. Mm-hmm. It's just already landed. Right? So now the review was easier. And the thing that I found is a lot of times people like to think of things as discrete work, but honestly, we can peel off tiny pieces of that and land it. Declutter ourselves. And for me with ADHD, this is a superpower. Yeah. Because it keeps me engaged, it keeps me productive, it keeps me feeling like I'm making progress, and it allows me to declutter my mind. I don't have to think about that change and the reason I made it because it's no longer part of the PR.
Yeah. All right, get to that.
So, the tailwind or vanilla CSS?
I don't think I'm allowed to have an opinion because I haven't written product code in any serious capacity in a long time.
Okay.
My last company, I spent a little bit of time building an app, but like, I'm not a product engineer. I've been an infrastructure engineer for a long time.
Is the correct answer YAML for you then? Or?
No, okay. Absolutely not. And not JSON files either. I think when I've looked at it, I don't like Tailwind, but I've read the arguments both ways and they both seem reasonable. And use what works for you.
Sure.
And there's so many people out there who are like, yeah, it's ugly, but it's so productive. And that is a really compelling argument for me. And it tells me there's probably an opportunity out there for a good infrastructure engineer to come along and say, hey, why don't I just write a little optimizer for Tailwind that just runs after the fact and takes all your ugly things and combines them into whatever recombination class that does all those things that you wanted to do and move on.
Yeah.
Stop having this conversation.
That's my argument every time is someone will be like, oh yeah, look how messy it is. And they'll put like the worst example and they've duplicated the same 25 classes on like 10 elements.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's clearly, you know, the same thing over and over. You should abstract
but
that.
You know what you know because of that 25 classes? You know exactly which styles are applied.
That's true. So I guess if you abstract it to a different, like a component class or whatever, then you wouldn't know by looking. But so that's, I guess, you lose the benefit. Yeah.
Right.
But like those people don't care about that benefit because they were going to write a separate CSS file anyway. So I'm like, if you're going to do that, you can use Tailwind and get the best of both worlds.
No, I do think that the thing that we just built with Main Matter, they were consulting for us and they did a lot of the work. So we have to call them out, whether it's our RIP or not.
You gave them money.
I know we gave them money. But, no, but whether it's RIP or not, it's amazing the work that they did. So work with Main Matter folks. We built a library that just got open sourced called Ember Scoped CSS. I am very optimistic that with a little bit of iteration, this is the long-term CSS solution for the Ember community. And honestly, the name is wrong. I think we should just call it Scoped CSS and open source it to the whole world for all JavaScript communities. Because what's really neat about it is that it doesn't care about the compilation target. It allows you to use a variety of input formats based on your preference. It's going to optimize them the same way. And then based on your configuration, it's going to output a final thing based on what you care about. So if you want to do inline styles, or you want to do a whole bunch of class names, you want your class name scoped a certain way, you want to use data attributes, some other attribute, it'll make it work. So author how you like, ship how you like, just have it be optimized.
Yeah.
I think that's the right approach.
Like, I think that's nice.
I just don't want to be having this debate anymore.
Yeah, right? Like, because in the end of the day, you know,
what we do.
Yeah, right? Of course we do. I mean, yeah, so, I mean, I had a similar feeling initially too. Like, I mean, and Robbie can attest to where I was like, I see all that. And I'm like, it's so ugly. Why do you want to do that? I've been through inline styles before and, you know, whatever else. But then otherwise, if I don't do that, then I have to do all this work myself. And I also don't want to do that because I don't care about CSS enough. I want it to look the right way, but I don't know. And then something you said is an adaptable tool for all use cases. Great. That's maybe the next level to some degree.
And I also hope with that it means that if we use an adaptable tool like that, that we're iterating towards the platform. What is disappointing about Tailwind is it feels like you're saying the platform is not good enough.
Yeah, let's just take it to open forum of, you know, you said you have other things you have opinions on. What are things you don't like or I guess do? I mean, that could be a hot take that it is
a strong
weird
opinion
that you like
that
it.
Could be controversial.
I do think I've gotten to the boring age of being a software engineer. Yeah. I think more of my opinions are nuanced and middle of the road. And
is it
gray.
Boring age in terms of like the age and stage of your career, like tenure? Or is it like you're just getting older and you're a little like, get off my lawn?
Neither of those things.
Okay.
It's that I've been around enough and seen enough to realize that getting really caught up in one approach is just an exercise in long-term frustration I don't need.
So I would almost say like a combination of both. And there is a time that I think there's a crossroads for individuals. And I think there's probably a lot of professions where this can happen and it's not individualized to us. But I do think like you hit a maturity and you make kind of a decision is either like you're going to lean in hard and that's just going to be your identity and that's it. Like your opinions and the investment in technologies or what successes you've had or whatever are kind of it and you are going to lean in. Or you're like, I'm kind of me and I'm less about the specificity of it and I'm more about the like, let's get something done and you're not emotionally attached to that, right? Like
I think the people who fall into that former camp and are more emotionally attached, honestly, and maybe this is the hot take.
This is the hot take.
I don't think they ever actually succeeded. And I don't think if they did succeed, they actually know why they succeeded.
I call that like the folks that basically hit a bullseye at some point, and then that bullseye is it, and they probably can't ever do it again.
Yeah.
There's my hot take.
Opinions are good.
Sure. It's not wishy-washy. You have knowledge, but you're able to abstract that as well.
I'm blunt with everybody. Mm-hmm. I think opinions are good, but I only put them out there. And I'm only so blunt because I think it frames conversations better and leads to consensus and decisions being made. If you are wishy-washy, you don't reach the final outcome that you need to reach.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can't go into it expecting that there isn't nuance. You can't go into it expecting that you are right. You just need to put out there what you think to make sure that the other person either does or doesn't agree with it. And you can figure out where you guys both stand or gals both stand.
Mm-hmm. Or people. Yeah. Or,
just figure out what everybody stands on the issues.
I've been caught in this a couple of times because my Gen Xer thing. So you know where they stand.
You know why I got caught in that? I normally am pretty good about that, but you know why I got caught? I actually was thinking about somebody in the moment. And
they are a
he, him.
Yes.
And so like my pronouns just immediately went there versus. Yeah,
you were visualizing.
I was visualizing too much.
I do that too, so I understand that. And that's probably some things that have happened.
We're all doing the best we can.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to insult anyone. I just sometimes just doing the best I can, mm-hmm. and that falls short.
Yeah, our brains only work so well.
You know, we're not helping it. But you know, where are we? I don't know. There's things to say. You need to change the neural pathways from time to time. But this isn't the neural pathway show. So
this is the sleeping on chairs.
Sleeping on chairs. Once again, welcome back to sleeping on chairs. Yeah. Okay, so additional technology things, and you mentioned something about like a more abstract name to a package, and it kind of made me think, so I want to go back to at least my thought or whatever else. So Ember Data, you are the Ember Data guy. I mean, like it or not, it's kind of been the thing for a pretty long time. As you were speaking about today, that those things are going to continue to evolve and abstract and be a little more, I don't want to say like piecemeal or something, but less about it being Ember specific and more about being data specific. If you could rename it Ember Data today, what would you call it?
I don't know if I'm allowed to reveal.
Let's say this doesn't air for weeks.
Yeah. Still not allowed to reveal. Okay. There's things to be worked out.
Sure. Well, whether there's it comes to fruition or not, or whatever.
I probably am allowed to say this. But yeah.
So we can cut anything if there's anything.
There's that too.
Yeah.
I don't think you're gonna have to cut this. So we'll come back if you have to. The answer is Warp Drive. I've been squatting the name for a long time. It'll be called Warp Drive.
I'm going to go to name.com right now. Hold on a second.
I've got the NPM package for Warp Drive, and I've got the NPM org for Warp Drive.
Nice.
My journey into Ember Data began with Warp Drive. I used Ember Data early in my Ember career enough to figure out its flaws, the flaws that I'm trying to correct today, and quickly decided that I wasn't going to be using it for my personal projects. But I also knew that I wanted the abstractions it was capable of providing. And I started to build a replacement. And that was what I named Warp Drive. I had kind of published a very, very rough canary of like, this is something that sort of works if you kind of sort of do it this way. That was right when I joined LinkedIn. And then LinkedIn was like, well, we want you to work on Ember Data. We already are heavily invested in it. So please try to fix it, which was, I don't think they were prepared for the length of journey it was going to take to fix. I do think I tried to strongly hint, but I think people just were hopeful that magically it would get fixed overnight.
You'll get there.
And unfortunately, it was a lot of learning for me around how do you communicate long-term projects to a big company, because big companies hate to hear the same buzzword more than a quarter or two.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had to go 4 years on that and I wasn't done.
There's not a great KPI around like multi-year technology projects if you're not a tech company per se, right? You're a social company and other things.
And it's not to say we didn't deliver value. We actually were delivering a lot of value in changes in with the library and things we were building around the library in that 4 years. But from a branding and marketing perspective to technology leaders, all they hear is Ember Data. Yeah. You don't hear, this is our data management solution at LinkedIn needs to be able to do X. They don't hear it that way. They hear the buzzword at the top and they go, I've heard about this too many times. Why am I paying for it?
Yeah. Right. Why isn't this done?
Exactly.
They understand it's being done or not. And they don't.
Yeah. It's done or it's not done.
Yeah.
So this has really reshaped how I interact with engineering leadership as I discuss open source work. I don't discuss it in a way that is branded. I don't discuss it in a way that is technology specific. I discuss it in a way that is very rooted in engineering fundamentals. Mm. We have a need to be good at X, so we're going to invest here. We have a need to get to Y, so we're going to invest here. And I have found a lot more success in things that take longer periods of time, pitching it that way and getting companies to understand where the value is fundamentally in their engineering organization and where the value is from the perspective of
risk to the company if they don't do that.
Okay, there you go. So it's solutions-based engineering, yes, essentially, and it, regardless of what the tools are, the thing that gets worked on over time, and it's not about discussing the tool evolving. It's more about continually looking at the business risk issues and saying the solution is these things, and we are engineering this solution.
Could you imagine if you were a construction company, mm-hmm, and you wanted to get houses built faster, and you knew that the bottleneck was how fast you were hammering in nails? All your engineer ever talked about was hammer 2.0.
Yeah, right. This is funny because in recent times, this is like a similar analogy that's been told to us. And so yeah, you're like, well, we need hammers. We need to continue with the hammer 2.0. Well, I'm here with a screwdriver and that's it. We're going to screw these in, right? That's it. I can still get the things in. I'm just going to screw them in.
So I really think that, you know, it's if you're out there and you're listening and you're wondering, how do you get a company to invest in open source? It's not about open source. It's about value to the company. The tricky thing is how to decouple it from ROI. Because a lot of engineering companies, and especially companies that don't understand their engineering companies, are going to ask you for what is my ROI. When you reframe it around engineering fundamentals, and when you reframe it about needs the company has, and when you reframe it about risks the company has and what you're addressing, you're going to find more success. That's not to say this is the thing that you are always, this is not some strategy that is 100% successful, right? Because it still actually has to be aligned. You have to find a company that actually has these needs and those needs be a high enough priority, because there are prioritization calls being made by leadership where they may agree with you. They might think, yeah, you know what? Our build tooling being faster would be a huge boost to productivity. But honestly, shipping product twice as fast is not going to make us that much more money compared to this other thing we can build right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then they will pick that.
They will pick that.
They will pick new shiny in that sense.
And I think the other skill that I've got here that maybe others could replicate is important to realize. It's important to internalize this lesson. You're not in control, and that's okay. When I pitch something, I don't expect to be successful.
There we go.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm going to put a small pin in it just for a second, or a pause really, because we were talking about this before around open source too, right? Like, you don't decide whether or not you take an attempt or commit to an endeavor, whether you know you will guaranteed win that. But if you have commitment and you have interest and you want a learning out of it, regardless, right? You've learned, you got to this point to where you have a lot of like reinforcement and chutzpah, I would say, like, right, about it, because you've been down that path a number of times. So again, I just want to like take a moment to say, like, exactly, make an attempt there, learn something about your own pitch and what works in your organization and what you can take kind of moving forward there. I would just like implore people, if you don't be defeated by a no, right? No's are going to happen.
Don't be defeated, but also don't get embittered.
Boom. Yeah.
A lot of people, when they hear no, they just shut down and internalize a lot of frustration, and eventually they might move on. Recognize that we're all humans, even your leaders are, and they are making prioritization calls that you don't necessarily understand, and they have information that you don't necessarily have. At the same time, mistakes can be made. So I make the best pitch I can, and I let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely.
And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I'm just going to make sure that I did the thing that I needed to do, my part of the equation, which is make sure that they knew that this mattered.
Yep. And then
it's up to them.
And they're leaders for that reason. They are on the hook at different levels, like you said, and have different information. And you just do the best job you can providing them the most information from your particular expertise, because you're there for that expertise, and you provide it, and they decide the priority and whether that is necessary or not. You know, maybe not now, maybe later. Who knows where that kind of goes, but at least like you're giving them your expertise, and that's absolutely what you're paid for. And whether you're,
given the go-ahead to build and to do on that, or to act on that, or to like help support another initiative, well, I mean, that's business objectives are there, and that's what you're there for. So
absolutely. There's one last final piece to this puzzle. Mm-hmm. How have I been successful pitching open source?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's good things to put out mm-hmm. for the people.
When it comes to being an employee of a company, because I think this answer is a little different as a consultant, and I've pitched a little Absolutely. Differently as a consultant. Yeah. When it comes to being an employee of the company needed to know that I actually had the company's best interest at heart. And what this means is you've got to pick your battles. You might know that something needs to happen in open source. You might know that some work needs to be done, but you might look around and realize that there's some other work in the company internal that is more existential to the company, more valuable to the company, and a better trade-off to make. If you can recognize that, your leaders are going to recognize that. So they will call bullshit and you will lose their trust. So if you recognize that, you explain to them the trade-off so that if they, for some reason, think otherwise, you get to do the open source. But they understand that you are thinking about the company first.
Yeah.
Right.
I think like showing that you're not, yeah. you're not being selfish. You're not asking for that for selfish reasons, that you see the entire
It's a give and it's a take.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great advice.
And you do it that way, you will, as you build trust, as you build confidence that your decision making is something that the company can trust, mm-hmm. they will question it less. And that's not to say they won't question it. It's not to say that you just can just suddenly run nilly-willy, do whatever you want.
Right.
You've got to continue to be responsible. But it does mean that you're going to get a little less pushback when you come to them and say, I think this thing really matters.
Yeah.
Can I go do it? Yeah. Can we go do it?
Yeah, I do think, though, like on the flip side of that, if your task is build XYZ and you know some open source library helps to do that and it's missing a feature you need, that you shouldn't have to ask for permission to work on that. It should just be part of, I'm building this thing.
Oh, yeah, that's a process problem from the beginning.
There is some chance to work on some things, you know, on some level that just you shouldn't even have to ask for permission. But
you need to work with good people too.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are just companies that are full of people who are very selfish, even at all levels. There are companies that just simply do not understand technology at any level. And there are companies that they maybe actually are good people and they maybe understand technology, but they've thrown too much process at the problem and unintentionally created massive barriers. I really, for me, like I don't want to throw LinkedIn under the bus here, but LinkedIn was a company that actually was full of great people, was a company that really understood engineering in a lot of ways that I'm still unpacking lessons from today and I really appreciate and have tried to apply. But they fundamentally threw too much process at open source. And they have repeatedly failed in open source because of it. They have some successes out there. There's reasons for that. Internally to LinkedIn, I would call those anomalies, not an indication of their ability to manage open source.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's, I think some of that probably, I mean, I don't know the internals of LinkedIn, but like being part of Microsoft and bigger things and like, how much of the process do they actually get to own even, or how much of it is dictated on high?
Say, there is that, folks from GitHub will tell you too that GitHub was this way. There's pre and post Microsoft in that world too. So yes and no, kind of along that way.
And with LinkedIn, while I was there, we never felt that Microsoft was pressuring us to change our engineering practices.
Okay.
I've heard rumors that it's changed since, that there has been that pressure, but I can't speak to that.
There wasn't an effect while I was there.
Yeah,
that's fair.
But I think there was, you know, a compounding factor there, which was we were in the black when they bought us. We were a profitable company and had been a profitable company for a long time when they bought us.
Right.
And that goes a long way to buying yourself a lot of grace.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, why would we come in and impose anything on you? Because you're doing it right already. Yep. You just want to capture that revenue, you know, and that user base for whatever reasons, you know.
Yeah. Whatever their motivations were, like They didn't need to squeeze us for a dollar.
Yeah. No, they just needed cash checks. They just needed, you know, they were like, they were looking for an outlet for, you know, boomers are posting on Facebook. Maybe we can get boomers to post more on LinkedIn.
No. No, my suspicion has always been it was our cloud infrastructure, but honestly, like other people have said, it was our then COO.
Oh, so you know, a capture of like top talent. Top talent in some way. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I know that they're trying to continue to like chase GCP to at least take like the second spot in infrastructure and kind of do some more things with Azure, but hard to say.
I have no idea. I was never a part of any of that discussion. So like, you know, it's even internally, it was all just, we have no idea what this happened.
Yeah, it happened. Some of us cashed some big checks, Sam. I don't know.
Part of me, and this is like zero basis in any evidence anywhere, like not even discussions. It was just part of me just always kind of felt maybe Jeff Weiner was just looking for a nice retirement. Not from a paychecks perspective, mind you. He's just like, you know what? I'm not sure who's taking over after me. Microsoft and Satya sounds great. This is a nice way for me to
I feel like
off.
It's going
to
land just fine and I can leave it feeling good, and go to bed at night. Yeah. Good stewards to the platform. Yeah. And I mean, like nothing's changed. So at least as far as my usage, whatever, you know, that amounts to, but so that makes a lot of sense there.
Yeah. I mean, I think Microsoft's done a great job with a lot of things recently. You know, the GitHub's still pretty good and they have like everything that I use for playing games and stuff too. Like, I mean, all of my life.
They own us cradle to grave. Like, to be honest, they own us cradle to grave.
It really does seem like
I write my code in VS Code. Mm-hmm. I write it with languages that they
maintain.
I host it on software that they provide. Like literally, most aspects of the stack, there's a little bit of Amazon in there, but most aspects of the stack is a Microsoft owned product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It's crazy. So here's what I want to know. I'm going to pivot a little bit, unless you have some more tech.
Okay. No. You do what you want.
Nobody lets me do what I want. Because then it would
be what you want, but I actually did want to get to the fourth hot take. That's the only one I might actually have a hot take on.
Okay.
Let's do that then, real quick.
No. Start with where you're going.
No, let's come back around to it. Okay. Come back. I just want to ask some other things. Thank you. Now you let me be me. Not last night.
That sounds weird. I don't have context on that. That sounded not even
jokes that I was going to make to my to guests, and then they were like, "Oh, you're being a little edgy and whatever else." Because I'm like, I don't know.
I know what you're talking about now. But
exactly. Okay. So I should clarify, dear listener. By last night, we were in public having drinks, just discussing
planning.
Chuck and
I have separate hotel rooms.
We have separate rooms. You know, I cannot
verify the accuracy of that.
Yeah, but not that there's anything wrong with that. Not for us.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So if you had a different career, what would it be? If you couldn't be an engineer.
Professional runner.
Yeah.
I feel like that was an easy one.
Let's walk that back. If I could have another career with the skill set that I actually have and apply full time to it, not worry about a paycheck, with who I am, my skills, I would be a runner.
Okay, perfect.
But if we could go purely by desire,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, let's do that.
I would be a singer.
Okay.
I can't sing worth a damn. You do not want to hear me sing.
Do you do karaoke and stuff, though?
I try.
I love it.
I get so embarrassed doing karaoke. Yeah. I'm just like, I will do one song.
Saw the pour you gave yourself. You'll be less embarrassed tonight.
I'm sure. Like, you probably will get some good karaoke out of me tonight. Yeah. But I just never really. I can play the piano with improv.
Okay.
Like, I understand chords and chord progressions and how to decorate. Like, I love just playing by feel. It's not a tune thing. I just literally can't match a tune with my vocal cords.
Yeah. Have you taken voice lessons or anything to try?
Who else said that?
Somebody did say that.
Somebody in like the last few episodes said that.
Yeah.
Now I'll have to
figure that out. But I love singing. I actually love the ability to express myself with my voice. And the fact that I can't has just eaten me my whole life.
I don't want to take away from everything else you've said, but this is my favorite part of this episode. Yeah. So that's right.
I think that's very cool. Yeah. I think it might have been Preston. Was it Preston? It doesn't matter. Well,
Preston, he's my coworker now. I'm going to have to talk to him about that.
It might be. It was someone that was at the whiskey library. I don't know who it was.
So probably was Preston, actually, because I don't think
we talked to the first two people about that.
Doesn't sound like
I think it was him.
Learn with Jason, vocal cords. I don't know, but I'll see if he Who knows? Do some videos on that. Anyway, that's an amazing answer. I love that.
Yeah. So let's go back to that last. Did you put more in my cup?
Yes, I did.
Oh, God.
I'm halfway through this cup that I fully poured.
You're powering through
that. I knew that he had so much, and I was like, we can't leave him hanging.
We almost could finish this bottle in one episode.
If we drank a bottle per episode, that shit would be legit. Okay.
It helps that I'm a runner.
Yeah. Right.
I just burn right through it.
It helps that I'm a sleeper.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Okay, so I'll go back to it. So I don't have to give context. I do appreciate that because this is a...
Change the question so you don't do context this time. It's worded differently, but whatever. Okay. Just ask your question.
Oh, right. Yeah, I try to put Ed on the spot more or whatever else. Okay, will HTMX, right? Yes, change the way we build the web apps?
I'm going to give you both answers.
Great.
The soft answer is no.
Okay.
My reasoned, principled, non-hot take, we're very neutral, I'm experienced, everything is gray, is no.
My hot take half a is cup of whiskey answer.
No.
Oh.
Absolutely not. There's no fucking way. It's never going to fucking happen. And you can cut that out if you need to.
No, I don't need to. I don't care.
No, we're unedited.
Now, here's the cool thing about this, though. I don't give a shit about what HTMX is. I actually had to Google it and look it up. Right. I looked at that question and I was like, I don't even know what this is, so I can't answer it. So I was going to punt on it, but then when I looked it up and I looked at it and I was like, okay, I get it. And it's neat, but it doesn't matter. And here's why it doesn't matter. I think we are approaching, maybe not quite at yet, but approaching a very different era in the maturity of JavaScript development. There are a lot of different perspectives out there right now that are equally succeeding about how you should build an app. And I think the reason that we're equally succeeding is not because they're all equally good. They're all providing great DX. Great. People don't actually care about DX. Developers care about DX. Product doesn't care about DX. Absolutely. Product cares about, does our user like this? And there's just been this lie out there for a long time that site speed matters. And I can tell you from experience in my career, if you're B2B and often B2C, that doesn't actually matter. Not if you're an app-like experience. There are exceptions to this, and people cite the exceptions too often. But site speed, it matters, but like only to a degree. Like, we want to be fast enough. Mm-hmm. We do not need to be as fast as possible.
Right. If I need you, it doesn't matter kind of thing.
We need to work well in your environment of network conditions and bandwidth and CPU constraints and memory constraints. But if you're not our customer base and you don't have those constraints, it doesn't really actually matter. And because of this, there are a lot of equally valid approaches to building an app. And they have trade-offs. And we have not been willing to actually honestly talk about those trade-offs. And I wish we were. I think we are approaching the point we can honestly talk about the trade-offs, where it's no longer about what the DX is because the DX is equal. And because of this, the answer is also yes. There are apps that HTMX is going to be exactly correct for. There are apps that Remix and Next and Nuxt and React and Ember and Angular and Vue are SvelteKit are exactly
other coming
correct
later.
For.
Right.
Quick, solid, doesn't matter. Redwood.js, shout out to Preston, was on the show. Like, I still think you should be a Ember contributor.
Tom Preston Werner,
I know. Yeah. Did you love that he hadn't really even heard of it? He just basically, he's the Rails guy.
I was like, your entire philosophy is Ember.
Ember.
Please
I know. We
come
thought
to
that
Ember.
Too. I know. We should try to talk
we'll
to
take
him
some
again,
of that funding.
Well, yeah.
I put this out there the other day. There's a funding level which I leave audit board and just work on open source.
Wow.
Like, there is, that does exist.
Yeah, and Tom did talk about, like, I mean, there's a time where they want to talk about the Vue layer and allow you to bring your own framework.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
I mean,
they remember, I'm not the Vue layer. I don't care about the Vue layer.
Yeah.
My perspective with Ember data is
that data
is the framework.
Well, there you go. I mean, once you have an agnostic data layer, you can kind of play anywhere you want.
Yeah.
I will always be Ember first because I love the Ember community. I will always be Ember first because I think Ember offers a very compelling templating story, a very compelling DX. Mm-hmm. But if you as a company want to refactor from Ember to React or React to Vue or Vue to SvelteKit, and you're using my library for your data library, I don't want that to mean that you need to stop using Ember data.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Warp Drive, as we mentioned earlier.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. I want it to mean that that is the constant. And in my experience looking at single page applications, which are just one of the many applications types that go into this equation of, is this framework right for you?
Yeah, yeah.
In single page applications, which have been really good and really valuable in B2B, which have taken more companies than I can count to $1 billion valuations on Ember, even when it was slow as fuck. Sorry for the language. I really don't know what rating this podcast has.
Adult. We're drinking alcohol. It's adult.
We are drinking alcohol. This is true.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
What I see in all of this is I want to deliver a data framework that is consistent and stable and maintainable for your app, even if as you go with the winds. I don't care if you're using Remix. You need managed fetch. Mm. Because if you hit your API, you need a session authentication. I don't care if you're using Next. It's true as well. And I think overriding fetch is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
I don't care what framework you use. I think that I can offer a very compelling story with Ember data. Have we been there historically? No. Will we get there? Yes. Are we close? I finally think we are.
Ooh, I like it. Close. I'm not even going to press you on what close means. I like the feeling.
I think for the Ember community, the is Ember data right for you question turns from a maybe to a yes within the year. Probably within 3 months.
Nice.
It's close.
Yeah.
For the broader ecosystem, it's more of a function of when do I get pushed on it a little bit? Because I don't have the motivation right now because I work for a company that uses Ember.
Yeah, right.
But if somebody comes along and says, I'll do that last little inch, we're there. And I think I don't care if you use GraphQL. I don't care if you use REST, Active Record, JSON API, tRPC, gRPC, Protobuf. These are all amazing things.
Sure, yeah.
I think Ember data is still the best possible answer for your app.
Nice.
And it's going to take a little while to prove that. People are going to challenge me on it, and I welcome it. And I think it's going to take a long time for people to realize that what I'm saying is right, if they ever realize it at all. But the reason I'm saying what I'm saying is, it is an abstraction layer that allows you to go through decades of app development, changing your APIs, changing your conventions, changing your formats, changing how you want to request data, changing whether you author your query on the client side or just upload a recipe or use standard REST-like behavior or something else entirely, whether you have a very, very by-the-spec API or a very loose API. I think it is something that offers value to you. And your app is going to evolve.
Yeah.
And the other technologies out there assume that it is not.
Yeah. Which isn't true because that's constantly what we do. Yes. Anyway, so it's
always changing.
It's a misnomer to think that we finally landed on the thing, right? Like we could burn it all tomorrow and start over.
I didn't spend 8 years refactoring Ember data to support one format. I spent 8 years refactoring Ember data to answer what were the fundamental problems that it needed to solve? What were the fundamental patterns that were universal? What are the things that every app needs, no matter what format they're using, what ergonomics they want, that allows them to maintain their app for a long period of time? And the reason I wanted to answer that question, I don't know how common this is in other ecosystems because I haven't worked in a lot of other ecosystems, but what I can tell you is I have worked with so many $1 billion-plus valuation apps. And those apps, they don't exist for 1 year. They don't exist for 2 years.
Right.
They're 6-year-plus. They're 9-year-plus. They're 12-year-plus. You need something that is going to evolve with your app for that long if you want to reach that valuation is the conclusion that I've reached.
Hmm.
And maybe that's a little bit misguided because I'm biased because I've been in the Ember ecosystem and I welcome that challenge. But I feel that we have had so many unicorns come out of, in my opinion, bad patterns.
Yeah.
Simply bad abstractions, simply because they were stable.
Yeah, there you go. The stability, the guardrails, the
I want to keep the stability.
Yeah.
Keep the stability, but enable the evolution.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah. From
across all of Ember, that's like always been the
Yes, that's an Ember fundamental ideology, and I think that what Chris is saying and what I'm kind of thinking here is kind of the long tail message is that you have to understand that there's a I want to say constraint, but it's probably like wrong terminology, but just like latch on to the ideology, not necessarily the implementation so much, right? And then keep that going. I know we're like long tail running on time, so I have one other very fundamental. I've got another very fundamental question. Okay. I want to make sure we squeeze in or whatever. So let's say we go to a Japanese bar, and it has karaoke. What's the first song you pick?
If I have to sing,
yeah, you have to sing. It's your first song.
Have you checked the Ember Data release notes?
I haven't.
Not recently.
No. Oh man. Okay, so. I title songs by what has emotionally hit me while I've been authoring the code.
I love it.
So for a while, it was I'll Follow You Into Dark by Death Cab for Cutie.
Okay.
One of the few songs I could definitely karaoke, probably even on key, which is rare.
We'll hit you up for the Postal Service reunion tour.
I'm going.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm going. It's actually a dual concert. You can love this. It's Death Cab for Cutie with Postal Service.
That's funny. That's easy to build up, I
guess. It's very easy to pull off, obviously.
He gets a double paycheck. Right? It's a win-win. Yeah,
it's a win-win. But it's kind of hilarious to see it on the ticket. But you know, it just means that they're going to play the songs that you want.
I love
want.
That, though. Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to that. And he's an ultra runner.
Huh.
That's the cool thing about this.
I don't even remember his name.
I always forget his name too. But he's an ultra runner. He shows up to races, and I've been really praying that while he's in Oakland, if you for whatever reason listen to a tech content podcast, which I highly doubt.
Tech Whiskey. We're in the top 1% of Tech Whiskey podcasts of the world.
Of all podcasts.
Of all top 3%
because most people do like
world.
One podcast and then go, I don't like that shit.
Well, then we're not failing. We're not failing anyway.
Yeah. So, but if he's out there and if he's listening, Monday night, Skyline Gate in Oakland, it's a great crew. No one's going to be in all of your fame. No one's going to probably even know who you are because you'll just show up and no one knows what you look like. Come run with us. We'd love to have you, and if you want to talk about the intersection of music and ultra running, I'd love to hear it. Death Cab for Cutie, I Will Follow You Into the Dark. It was a theme song for me for most of the 4.x series in Ember Data because I was killing the parts of it that I hated.
Ooh, I love it. Yeah.
And it's like, if I had to go to my grave to kill this thing, I am going to do it.
Yeah.
A lot of the 5.0, starting with 4.12 really, which was like the first release, the last release of the 4.x series. And in some ways, because of the way that we do deprecation management, you're capable of resolving the deprecations and having them stripped from your app. So in theory, 4.12 with deprecation slipped stripped is the same thing as 5.0. It's actually better than 5.0 if you do that because 5.0
Pro
isn't
tip.
An LTS release.
Yeah.
So it doesn't receive bug fixes.
Right.
And 4.12 does. That said, if you're on 4.12 and you strip those deprecations out, it's the first release where I'm actually proud of the library. It's not where I want it yet. We're getting very close. But it's the first release where I'm proud.
Nice.
And so you can see that in the song titles.
Love it.
Okay.
Rose-colored lenses.
Yeah.
Miley Cyrus.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Would that be the second song you would pick then?
No, actually. Ooh. But it is a song that I would pick.
Right. On your list.
I think that the other song that's always really spoken to me cuts deep. It cuts really deep. It's an emotional song, and it honestly never actually carries as a karaoke song, even though you kind of hope it would. Iris, the Goo Goo Dolls.
That song. Well, that'd be a good karaoke song.
As a kid, that song spoke to me so much. I know that song lyric for lyric, tone for tone. Only because it spoke to me so much.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah. These are all great answers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a confused little kid, but yeah.
things happen.
After that, I love T-Swift lately, too. Man, the whole... I could not resist cracking an Eras Tour joke in my talk today.
Yeah.
Simply because when it comes to Ember Data releases lately, it's been Miley Cyrus and Taylor Swift. That's the two albums I'm listening to over and over and over again. Midnights and Endless Summer Vacation. Yeah. Now, of those two, if I had to pick the better album, it's Endless Summer Vacation, because Miley, as a semi-rock artist, like kind of hearkening back to the 80s and 90s with a little bit of grunge in her voice, like, I am so proud of her for not giving a fuck what other people think and for going and just recording the music that she wants. Moreover, the thing that made me so like, holy shit, I'm gonna like this chick if I ever meet her, was realizing that I couldn't go get concert tickets. I had listened to Endless Summer Vacation like, you know, I don't know how many dozens of times writing Ember Data Code.
Yeah.
And I went, I need to get concert tickets. And I look it up and I realize she doesn't tour.
No.
She's like, I'm not into that. I'm not about that. I don't care about that. I love my fans, but like honestly, it's just it doesn't bring me joy.
Yeah.
It doesn't bring me satisfaction. And I don't need to.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to. You can't force me into it. I fucking love that.
Yeah, that's rare.
You know,
yeah,
she has popularity, so she just doesn't need to. It's like I think that is rare.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
To be a usually
you're forced
artist.
Into it because that's where you make your money.
Yeah,
usually.
Yeah, because of streaming and everything else. Yeah.
So when you see her perform on TV with her, you know, godmother, you know, Dolly Parton and whatnot, those are rare one-off situations. That's not part of any orchestrated tour. And it actually made me respect her more that. She knew herself that much.
Know your lane and just make the most of that.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
So. Yeah, no.
And I'm not going to pay the money for the Eras Tour.
It's fair.
All right, well, we are way over time. Do you want to plug anything before we end here?
Ember Data? I think we already plugged it, to be honest.
Yeah.
We already plugged it. We already plugged it, to be honest.
The Warped Tour, what? No.
Yeah.
We got to figure things out. Yeah. You know, we got to figure things out on the branding and the rename and when that happens. And I think the answer is, one, it has to actually be ready out of the box for the broader JavaScript ecosystem to use.
Right.
That's when it is Warp Drive. And two, I think I have to have fully convinced Yehuda and Leia and Tilda that this is something that still belongs to their brand projection.
Oh, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Ember Data is not mine. It's my baby at this point, as I was surprised to hear YCATS tell me the other day. It is my baby at this point. I do feel that way, but
definitely.
At the same time, I've always been respectful that it's not my IP.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's Tilda's IP at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking to hard fork. I'm not looking to rebrand without permission. And so, I went knocking and asking and saying, is this a possibility? And it was just like, yeah, we think it's obvious that this is where it's headed. And that was reassuring.
Yeah.
But we also got to work out, you know, like just making sure that all that's taken care of. Like, I don't want to own the IP. I don't need to take the IP.
Sure.
I just think that we saw this with TanStack query versus React query. People were adverse to the idea of an all JavaScript ecosystem data library being named after a framework.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I wish I could troll everybody by having them install Ember Data.
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. But if that's going to keep people from adopting something that's actually going to help them and help their apps and help them build billion-dollar products, I don't want it.
Well, that's a good plug.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you liked it, please subscribe, leave us some ratings and reviews. We appreciate it, and we will catch you next time.